It's time for America Outdoors Radio, the show that covers the outdoor scene across the U.S. of A. and the entire continent. Fishing, hunting, conservation, outdoor recreation, and great destinations, we cover it all every week. It's your country, your outdoors. Let's explore it together with your host, John Cruz.
There were some good times had by a lot of hunters and anglers in Boise last week. That's where the annual Backcountry Hunters and Anglers Rendezvous took place again, at the Convention Center there to be exact. And I've got to tell you, I really like Boise. First off, the downtown core is really pedestrian and cyclist friendly. There are lots of shops and restaurants to check out, nice architecture, and best of all, this city, it's clean. I mean, really clean. And that's something the downtown cores of Seattle, Portland, and San Francisco can't make a claim to these days. On top of all this, the people of Boise, by and large, they are very friendly. They'll actually smile at you when you walk by and even say hello. Again, not your normal big city experience. Throw in absolutely perfect springtime weather with warm temps and sunny skies, and you've got a great place to host a conference, or in this case, a rendezvous. Now, you probably know we support Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, but if you haven't been listening to their PSAs on our shows the last couple of years, let me tell you what this group, founded over a campfire in Southern Oregon in 2004, is all about. BHA is an advocacy group. It's full of very passionate hunters and anglers who care about pursuing these passions on our public lands. We're talking state public lands and federal public lands, and these folks are charged up about making sure these lands and the fish and wildlife found on them and in the waters, they want to make sure they're conserved and that they're around for future generations. The makeup of this group is different as well. Unlike many of the well-known conservation organizations out there that are primarily made up of membership that sports a lot of gray hair, or maybe at this point no hair at all, this group boasts 70% of their membership is under 45 years of age. It's a young group, and the energy and passion of these people is palpable, and being part of this group at the rendezvous, I'll tell you what, it's invigorating. So, what happened at this year's rendezvous? Well, there was training for new chapters and leaders the first couple of days, and there was a magnificent field-to-table dinner that a select few were able to score a ticket to before it sold out, and there was the Brewfest that was open to everybody outside the convention center on Thursday night, and it drew a crowd of some 3,000 to 4,000 folks who drank beer, listened to some good music, and talked hunting, fishing, and public lands. Friday and Saturday were full of great seminars covering a wide variety of topics, and there was a live podcast by Stephen Ranella and the Meat Eater crew, along with a film fest and a night of storytelling, and all of these events were very well attended. This week on the show, we'll be bringing you audio we recorded at the rendezvous. There was a definite theme to several of the seminars that was about R3, the need to recruit, retain, and reactivate hunters because our numbers have fallen dramatically in the past few years. We'll be talking to Samantha Petter with the Council to Advance Hunting and the Shooting Sports, as well as Trey Curtis, the new R3 coordinator for BHA, about this in a few minutes. After that, we'll talk to Mark Norquist. He's the founder of Modern Carnivore. He's a board member for BHA in Minnesota, and he's got some great advice about introducing adults to the sport of hunting. And I guarantee it's not the way that most of us go about doing it. You'll want to hear this, and you'll want to see the YouTube film series he's put together about this as well, because I really, really think he's onto something here about hooking adults into hunting who have no background in it at all. Some of the other seminars that were going on were meant to help you improve your game. There was one that taught you how to rig your drift boat for the optimal fishing experience, another about using llamas as pack animals for backcountry expeditions, and there was one I got to attend, improving your outdoor photography. The instructor for that one, Garrett Smith, also known as Dirt Myth. He is a photographer for Stephen Ranella's Meat Eater, just got back from an international assignment for Nat Geo, and he is going to share some great tips to help you take better photos of nature, no matter what kind of camera you use. On top of all this great rendezvous content, we've got some current fishing reports from four regions of our United States you'll be interested in, too. Let's not get too far off track, though. We've got more of the rendezvous to tell you about, and more about the backcountry hunters and anglers, and the perfect man to share that information with you. Our first guest on America Outdoors Radio this week is Lan Tawney, the CEO and president of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Like we said, we are broadcasting from the Convention Center in Boise, and that's where another very, very successful rendezvous is taking place. Lan, I understand the Brewfest had more people than ever, some 3,000 to 4,000 people. I understand we've got more attendees this year that we're pushing well over 1,200, maybe up to 1,400 people. And best of all, the membership numbers for this organization keep growing. What are we up to now?
We're at 36,000 members, and last time this year we were at 20,000, so like not quite exactly double like where we are, but we'll get to 50,000 before the end of the year.
So we talked about 6 months ago, you're at 25,000.
Yep.
We talked about 3 months ago, you were at 32,000,
yep.
And now you're at 36. This is absolutely amazing. And again, going back to Spokane, when we first met, yep. Where were we at then? About 10, 15,000?
You know, I think we're about 8,000 at that point. And what's just phenomenal to me is like we're doing this word of mouth, too. This isn't direct mail. This is people talking to people, and this is people coming to this event for the first time, seeing what we got going on, that Brewfest last night, seeing the energy that we have, and they're coming to us in droves.
And, folks, if you don't know what Backcountry Hunters and Anglers is all about, let me break it down for you really simply. It's all about people who are passionate about fishing and hunting and doing so on our public lands, the lands that you and I own as citizens of this United States. And this organization is very passionate about protecting these lands so that we can continue to enjoy these activities. So let's talk a little bit now about what seems to be the theme of this year's rendezvous. A lot of seminars, a lot of talk about R3, recruiting, retaining, and reactivating hunters because numbers are on the decline.
Yeah, you know, as these numbers go down, then there's less money that's going actually to for conservation and to manage the species and to do all the work on the ground that needs to be done. And so, you know, there's a lot of organizations that are really based on getting kids outdoors, which I think is absolutely awesome. What we're trying to concentrate on is that kind of like 20 and 30-something. So whether that's our R3 stuff that's at a college level, we have 39 college clubs now across the country. When we started 3 years ago, we wanted four. We have 39 now. And then we're also doing this program called Hunting for Sustainability, where we're basically doing a fast kind of course on hunting. And we're bringing in this kind of foodie movement where people, they like growing their own vegetables or like going like to the local farmer's market. Then the next step is like wanting to harvest their own meat. And so how do you do that? You either hunt or fish. And so they didn't grow up that way. And so we're just giving them the skills to be able to do that. And so that movement, that foodie movement, that local for movement is really being driven by those 20s and 30 somethings. And we're right in the middle of that.
You really are. And I think that's a key point here. A lot of other conservation organizations that are out there, or even advocacy organizations, the people that are their bread and butter, well, they're baby boomers, and they're aging out. And that's the same group that's aging out of hunting as well. This organization, you've got the sweet spot. You've got those young 20s to 40-year-olds that are in the prime of their careers, or they're early on, and they're absolutely excited and passionate about it. And those are the same people we really need to recruit when it comes to hunting now.
Absolutely. You know, 70% of our members are 45 and younger, which is you don't see that trend anywhere else. And so to me, that's the next generation of conservation leaders. And it's not only is it the next generation of conservation leaders, these are the ones that are actually driving these numbers that are finally going up for hunting and fishing.
Well, you're not just talking the talk as an organization. You're actually investing in it. We're going to be talking to your R3 coordinator. I mean, that's a real conscious decision to really address this issue head on, actually hire somebody that focuses on just this.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think a lot of other organizations have R3 coordinators. They're really focused on the youth, which I think, again, like, don't get me wrong, that's very, very important. But what we're trying to do with our R3 coordinator is concentrate on that 20 to 30 kind of something people.
And I sat in on a panel this morning, and it was really interesting because, yes, you go ahead and have these events for the kids. You have Hunter's Ed. You get them in. But the fact of the matter is they don't have any money. They don't have transportation to get out to the field. A lot of our kids these days are in urban environments, so it's really difficult for them to get out to places where they can hunt and fish. But when you're targeting these kids that are in college, right out of college, they've got a car, you know, that they're in great physical shape. They have the desire to do these things. A lot of them are foodies, like you said. I really do think that you found the sweet spot, and this is really a demographic that we need to target.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I think what's great, when they start getting turned on to hunting and fishing, those tentacles go out even farther because they get so excited about it, and they're going to tell their friends. And so this isn't just, like, the people that we're having at these events. They're actually going out and talking to other people, and, like, that's what's, I think, driving a lot of the increase in this area.
I agree. And I also think it's driving the increase in membership, too. And, folks, if you want to become a member of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, just go to the website. It's backcountryhunters.org. Joining is really easy. It's not very expensive at all. Join this tribe. Become part of this very passionate movement. Last question I've got for you, Land.
Yeah.
Where's the rendezvous next year?
Oh, we're going back to Missoula, Montana the first week in June, and I'm super excited about it. That's where our headquarters are. I mean, we've loved being down here in Boise the last 2 years. They've showed us a good time. The weather's been absolutely amazing. The people have been amazing. But we're going back to Missoula and bringing it home. So it's June 3rd through 6th, 2020 in Missoula, Montana.
I look forward to seeing you there, Land.
Awesome. Looking forward to having you as well.
We've got some really big news from our friends at Sportsman's Cove Lodge. They are having a sale, and it's taking place right now. You see, they've got some openings, not many, but they've got some onesies and twosies available on several dates this summer, and you could take advantage of it. Again, it's only for couples or individuals, but if you want to go to Alaska, fish for halibut, salmon, other bottom fish, and have the time of your life while staying at a wonderful lodge and eating great food, this is a can't-miss deal. The website to go to, alaskasbestlodge.com. That's alaskasbestlodge.com for Sportsman's Cove Lodge. Once you're there, pick up the phone, call Denise. Denise is the person to talk to and ask about the sales going on. You better hurry, though. Space is limited.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, the men and women working hard to keep public lands in public hands. Check us out at backcountryhunters.org.
Back in with America Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. We're broadcasting from the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers Rendezvous in Boise, Idaho. Every time I've been to one of these events, there's a theme. And I would say the theme this year definitely is all about R3. We've talked about this before in this show, recruiting, retaining, and reactivating hunters and anglers throughout the nation, because we are losing a lot of hunters. And again, we've talked about this before, folks. 1970, 40 million hunters in America, 20% of our population. Fast forward to 2016, just over 11 million, some 4% of our population. Some states are doing a whole lot worse than that, but we've got some people trying to turn it around. One of them is Trey Curtis. He is with the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers Association. He is their R3 coordinator. The other person working on a national level is Samantha Petter. She is with the Council to Advance Hunting and Shooting Sports out of Pennsylvania. It is great to have both of you on the show today.
Thanks for having us. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Let's go ahead and start with you, Samantha. How did we get to where we're at today? Why are the numbers declining so badly?
So declining and changing are two different terms we use a lot, right? So yes, there is a national survey that shows trends in participation rates. In 2011, we had 13.5 million hunters, roughly. Now, in the 2016 survey, it's about 11.7. So we are changing. But the thing that we are trying to keep in mind is that it's not just a number up and down. There's things called churn, which is basically I buy a hunting license every year, but I'm an anomaly. There's people out there that maybe only buy a license once every 5 years. So there's a lot of different aspects of participation that we're trying to understand right now. And as state fish and wildlife agencies get better data systems and we get better survey methodology, we're getting a better understanding of what's actually occurring.
Despite that, you have to agree that America as a country continues to grow in population, and as a percentage, less and less people are taking to the field to hunt. And that's concerning from a whole bunch of different aspects in terms of conservation, with less license fees that are going towards conservation issues, with less Robertson-Pittman tax that's going again towards conservation issues, and our voice becomes drowned out by the voices of anti-hunters. So I'll re-ask this question. I understand there's some churn. It's not quite as simple as it seems, but we have dropped. And I have heard that the aging out of the baby boomer generation, of the greatest generation, has a lot to do with that.
So there is a lot of changes coming down our pike. We're not unique in this situation in America where the generations impact us. The baby boomer generation is big and it's affecting things like Social Security, populations, everything like that. But the millennial generation is now bigger than the baby boomers. So we have potential, right? Hunting is something that was introduced to family style gatherings back, let's say, in the 60s and 70s and 80s. That was a common fare. Today, because there's less hunters, it's not as common. And how we're distributed across the landscape, like, hunters tend to gravitate towards more rural areas compared to urban. So as far as, like, total population and percent of the American public, there is a lot of challenges that we're facing. Right now, what we're seeing is that in urban centers, they might not even come across a hunter ever. Compared to rural, you might know 15 different people that hunt. So there are challenges as far as numbers go, as in how people are distributed across the landscape, and as the population of America rises, and if the population of hunters were to increase, we could face some really challenging times ahead.
Urbanization, aging out of current hunters, both issues, but it gives me hope that there's an organization like yours and NGOs or non-governmental organizations like the National Wild Turkey Federation and now like Backcountry Hunters and Anglers that are working on this. So tell me about your job. This is a new position and what BHA hopes to do about this.
Yeah, absolutely. So R3 is a brand new position within BHA, but it's certainly not new to the organization. Just to preface, the organization itself is growing like crazy, and that's why I'm super excited to be in this role for BHA. In the last 5 years, we've doubled our membership every year, and now standing at between 35,000 and 40,000 members, no sign of slowing down. With that, our state chapters and our college clubs have promoted R3 conscious efforts across North America in terms of all the events they've hosted. My job now is to make it a recognizable concerted effort and create partnerships with different agencies and organizations to really bolster R3 efforts across the country.
So I was talking to Eric Dinger with Powderhook about this very issue, and he said that we've had a lot of focus on introducing kids to the sport, but that the sweet spot is really those people that are just in college or getting out of college. And you were talking today about this on the panel, of you're doing specific things to reach out to young adults. And by the way, folks, young adults make up a huge part of this fast-growing organization.
Yeah, absolutely. I think with the Look More movement in particular, there's a lot of efforts being driven towards these types of programs as young adults actually have the freedom to go out and do these things, and they have a disposable income or will recently have a disposable income to, you know, actually buy a hunting license and continually buy a hunting license, and they don't have to have a parent to keep taking them afield. They can really do that on their own and build mentorships with people to help them with through the process.
So let's talk about some of the specific things that Backcountry Hunters and Anglers is doing at colleges and at chapter levels across the nation.
Yeah, so I think the big program we promote is our Hunting for Sustainability program. Essentially, this encompasses a lot of what we do in terms of R3. It started at the college level. It was a three-day weekend event for new and novice hunters to just get them interested or teach them about hunting, really focusing in on that local sustainable food source. And that really seems to draw in a very diverse group into, you know, one setting where we can teach them about the history of conservation and the hunter's role, the ethics around hunting, and then how to actually break down an animal into edible serving sizes. Beyond that, doing things like butchering clinics, kind of based off of our pint night model, which has garnered a ton of attraction across the country and into Canada, and then trying to make the Hunting for Sustainability weekend a little bit easier to digest by adults who do have time constraints and family constraints and stuff like that, where it's weeknights and some weekend days to just really meet customers where they are to give them those tools necessary to get out and actually get a field.
One of the things that came out of the panel today that was interesting to me was, you know, we've always talked about Hunter's Ed as being the gateway to get kids hooked on the sport. But when I heard the stat today that most kids who graduate Hunter's Ed buy that license, but the next year that number's fallen off 50%, that's really concerning. What are some of the more effective ways you're seeing at a nationwide level that we can use to get more people involved in this sport we love?
So let's think about hunter education in general. Hunter education is a tool, is a course to teach hunter safety. It wasn't meant to be a recruitment or retention or reactivation program. So now we're recognizing this, right? We've done studies like that. NSSF, the National Shooting Sports Foundation, did a hunter proclivity study, and they found within 5 years of taking hunter education that like 67% of people were not buying a license anymore.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot. So for us, what this shows us is that the funnel is huge. There's a ton of people out there that have been exposed to hunting at one point in their lives, are aware of it, interested in maybe even going towards a trial period. They've gone through hunter education, so they've invested some time. But the problem then is retention. So how do we keep them coming back, and how do we keep them active buyers? So if you remember earlier, I talked about churn. That's an aspect of it, right? If they come in, take on our head, buy one license, and then age out or don't participate anymore, what are we doing? That's a retention opportunity.
We could definitely talk another half an hour about this, but we've only got 10 minutes. So let's give out some websites. The first one, backcountryhunters.org. Great organization. They've put it on a wonderful rendezvous again. And if you're interested in becoming a hunter or angler and doing it on our public lands, this is the organization for you. What is the website for the Council to Advance Hunting and Shooting Sports, Samantha?
The council is CAHSS.org. And then if you're a volunteer with a non-government organization, a state agency employee, or if you want to get engaged in R3 efforts at your state level, go to nationalr3plan.com.
It starts with you. Make a commitment to take a new person hunting every year. And if all of us do this, if even a healthy percentage of us do this, we're going to get those numbers back up. Samantha, Trey, thanks for being here today and doing what you do on America Outdoors Radio.
Thanks for having us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or more importantly, if you sign up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare, and MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have more than 400,000 members now around the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2 billion of each other's medical bills, so they could help share your needs too. And best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is around $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 855-90-BIBLE. That's 855-90-BIBLE. 855-90-BIBLE.
You're back in with America Outdoors Radio for our special edition about recruiting, retaining, and reactivating hunters, recorded at the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers Rendezvous in Boise. Just sat through a really, really interesting presentation by Mark Norquist. He is the founder of Modern Carnivore. He hails from Minnesota, and he's got some really good thoughts about introducing adults to the sport of hunting. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me here, John.
So, Mark, I really liked your strategy in terms of getting adults into hunting, because I'll tell you about a fail I had. And it wasn't an adult, but it was as a teenager. And I had a friend of mine, and we liked to canoe together. And come fall, me and a couple of my other friends, we would canoe down at the end of the lake. And so I said, why don't you come hunt with us? And so he had a shotgun, and we went out, and he shot his first bird. And he, I could tell he just didn't like it. He just didn't like the experience at all, and he never hunted again. And it's like, you know, that always stuck with me, that the first time I tried to be a mentor, I had an abject failure. And your strategy is very much different when it comes to recruiting adults into the sport of hunting. And it starts off with a conversation. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Sure. I think, you know, like you said, John, the situation we found ourselves in a lot of times in recent decades is, oh, somebody wants to learn how to hunt. I'm going to tell them about what hunting is, and or I'm just going to take them out and on my hunt and do what I do. And what I encourage people to do is really to understand what that person's interest in hunting is, and have them share that with you. And oftentimes it can be something very different from what you expected it to be. For some people, it is an interest in wild game. For some people, it's an interest in shooting. For some people, it's an interest in camaraderie outdoors. And I think it's imperative that we ask the questions to find out what the motivations are, and then tailor your response and discussion with them around that, and even an experience. So, like, take them out, and maybe with your buddy from years ago, maybe, you know, either he didn't get something that he was expecting, or something happened that he wasn't really ready for. And so I think it's imperative that we really understand where the person's coming from.
When it comes to hunters talking to non-hunters, especially when it comes to adults, there's things that we say that aren't very convincing. For example, you know, hunters help manage the herd, and we have an important role in conservation. You should go hunting with me. And if you're a non-hunter, that doesn't really mean anything to you. People, they don't understand the story around hunting. They don't understand why that's important, that they basically are the herd culler. And you've, again, kind of broken it down into ways we ought to have this conversation with people who may have a little bit of interest in hunting but just don't know a lot about it.
Yeah, I think, you know, there are a lot of good reasons to hunt that we can provide to people, like what you said, you know, herd management as an example. But what people more than not are going to resonate with is your personal story also, which is, why do you love to hunt? And that's going to be something very personal to you, and it's something, it may or may not resonate with the other person, but at least they'll get your authentic perspective on it, and your passion will come through. I have yet, as I had said in my presentation, I have yet to meet somebody who said that they decided to hunt because they wanted to be a responsible herd culler.
You're absolutely right. So let's talk about how you introduce people to the sport of hunting, especially adults. And you actually put together a great film series about this, a series of short films that you can see on YouTube. And the film is called Awaken the Hunter Within. Highly recommend watching this. It's great. You have three different hunters that you take from nothing, in terms of they've never hunted before, they don't know anything about hunting, to actual hunts and a field-to-table experience. So let's talk about the steps you took in this film series that can work for anybody who wants to be a mentor.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it really began with a simple conversation, reaching out to some people. And that's a critical step of the process, I think, that needs to be understood. And that is that reaching out to, as I like to call them, not yet hunters versus non-hunters, is a critical juncture. Finding out what their interest might be in it, and then taking that pathway to really understand how you tailor the experience for them. Now, that being said, there are some fundamentals that are the groundwork you're going to do. So in the film series, Awaken the Hunter Within, we really had a conversation, understood what those interests were, then got them involved with some online curriculum within the state, which was the firearm safety certification, and then got them out to the range to understand what the guns are about, and then introduced them to a community of support network of individual people who are mentors for them, to teach them about the wild game aspect, the shooting aspect, the culture of hunting and those things, and then really use that to tailor the experience to each individual and stay with it. That's the key.
Well, and I love what happens next, because I think, again, going back to how many of us try to introduce people to hunting is, come with me on my hunt. We're going to go after a big bull or a big buck, or, you know, we're going to go goose hunting. It's going to be really, really cold in January, and you're going to be in a layout blind. And these are not successful ways, more often than not, to introduce people to hunting. You introduce them to hunts where they have a high chance of encountering game, small game. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, absolutely. So even though, you know, someone might have an interest in going deer hunting, going elk hunting, moose, what have you, a large game animal, we find that there's a lot of similarity, especially with squirrel versus deer as one example, to the hunting process. And so now you create a scenario that you can have more flexibility around. You can really hopefully engage more quickly with game and go through the full process. And you can still talk about, you know, from the standpoint of field dressing, the anatomy of the animal, etc. So that's one of the things that we do.
And again, in the film series, folks, you're going to see a number of very common small game species, but I just can't recommend this approach enough. It makes perfect sense once you lay it out. Until you lay it out, you don't even think about doing it. So kudos to you. Next up, scouting. And now we're scouting for the big game. We've got the small game experience behind us. Your soon-to-be hunters are now, well, they're at least knee-deep into the sport of hunting. So tell me about scouting and then the hunt itself.
Yeah, so the scouting piece of it is really interesting because you're taking them out into the field and showing them things that they've never really noticed before. So in this scenario, it was scouting for a deer hunt. So we're showing them scrapes, we're showing them deer rubs that they never understood about before. We're talking about how we're going to place a ground blind in this spot for this reason in terms of what we're thinking the pathway of the animals are going to be. And it's really moving that person, what I like to say is, from the role of an observer outdoors to that of a participant, where they're really understanding the inner workings of the animals out in these wild places, and they now are part of that process and really reading it and going after this game. And then, yeah, we took them out on a deer hunt, and I'll leave it to the film to relay the rest of it, but it was a great experience.
One other thing that you talked about today is the fact that a lot of people, especially in that young adult age group, you know, the 20s and through their 30s, they're getting into the sport of hunting because they're really into the whole food-to-table movement. You know, for so long, all of us as hunters have always thought the shot was the hunt. You make the shot, you get the kill, that's a successful hunt. But for this new generation of hunters, that's not it. It's the feast that follows. It's butchering that animal. It's bringing it to table. It's doing wonderful things with that food and ingesting it. That's what really counts for a lot of these new hunters.
What it really is it's the new trophy shot in terms of people putting emphasis with their social media posts, with the sharing of the stories of the friends around the storytelling of what they put on the table. And that's where, if we think in our traditional terms, we might be saying, hey, we're going to go out after this trophy buck, let's go get this booner. And in reality, what a lot of people find relative to deer hunting is they just as soon take a small yearling or a doe, and they're just going after the meat, and that's what they want to do. And so it's understanding the importance of the food. That's why we created Modern Carnivore originally. It's a universal appeal of great food that everybody can get, and it's fun to see the focus on that side of it.
We've got to go, but if you're out there and if you're thinking of introducing someone to the sport of hunting, don't do it like I've done it in the past. Do it like Mark is telling you to do. And if you want to literally sit through and watch this film series, it'll tell you how to do it step by step. Just go to YouTube and look for Modern Carnivore or Awaken the Hunter Within. That's the name of the film, Awaken the Hunter Within. You can also go to modcarn.com. That's modcarn.com, and learn about eating some of the best food there is out there. Mark, thanks for sharing this with us today on America Outdoors Radio.
Thanks so much, John. Really had fun.
We've got some really big news from our friends at Sportsman's Cove Lodge. They are having a sale, and it's taking place right now. You see, they've got some openings, not many, but they've got some onesies and twosies available on several dates this summer, and you could take advantage of it. Again, it's only for couples or individuals, but if you want to go to Alaska, fish for halibut, salmon, other bottom fish, and have the time of your life while staying at a wonderful lodge and eating great food, this is a can't-miss deal. The website to go to, alaskasbestlodge.com. That's alaskasbestlodge.com for Sportsman's Cove Lodge. Once you're there, pick up the phone, call Denise. Denise is the person to talk to and ask about the sales going on. You better hurry, though. Space is limited.
Hello, I'm Mark Hempstreet, owner of Shiloh Inns. Shiloh is proud to be celebrating over 40 years of providing you, our valued Shiloh customers, with Shiloh's sincere friendliness, efficient customer service, and clean, comfortable, attractive, non-smoking rooms and suites, all at an affordable price. Shiloh also offers many free amenities like free Wi-Fi and free continental breakfast or hot, full, delicious breakfast at most Shiloh Inns, as well as pools, spas, steam, sauna rooms, exercise fitness facilities, and business centers. And even the kids stay free. And for you dog lovers, Shiloh is very dog friendly. So ask your best friend where he or she wants to stay. Next time you're traveling for business or pleasure, we think you'll get a paws up for Shiloh Inns. For reservations, call 1-800-222-2244 or visit our website at shilohinns.com. Shiloh Inns, affordable excellence. American family owned and proud of it.
There's a place where the fishing is year-round, where the sun shines 300 days a year. The wineries and breweries are right downtown. The hiking and cycling offer spectacular spectacular views you just don't get in the big cities. Fortunately, the place is real and vibrant. It's the Dalles, Oregon, just 90 short minutes from Portland, along the gorgeous Columbia River, where the adventures are limited only by your imagination. Find out more at explorethedalles.com.
Looking to reel in the marketing opportunity of a lifetime? Then set the hook, because we've got it right here. America Outdoors Radio has sponsorships available, and we offer an affordable platform to reach thousands of listeners interested in fishing, hunting, and the outdoors. Find out more by contacting host John Cruz through his website at AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com. That's AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com. But hurry, if you wait too long, this big opportunity might just get away. That's AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com.
Wetlands are some of the most important ecosystems on Earth, but our wetlands are quickly disappearing. Find out how you can help. Join Ducks Unlimited today.
You're back in with America Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz, and we've got some fishing reports for you. We're going to start off in Anchorage, where, here's my question for you. Do you know what a hooligan is? In Alaska, that's the term for a smelt, which isn't a bad eating fish, especially when smoked, and they come in handy for bait too. There's a dip net season open for them in streams near Anchorage at the moment, and the best fishing has been just before high tide. The season's open until June 15th, but there is one catch. You have to be an Alaska resident to enjoy this fishery. Heading to the border of Utah and Idaho, Bear Lake is ice-free, and the Utah DNR reports the water is cold, 42 degrees, which means the lake trout and cutthroat, they're down deep, like 45 to 120 feet deep. But as the water warms up, those cutthroat will move into the shallows and become a lot easier to catch. Heading to North Dakota, it caught my eye. The state is stocking trout, catfish, and northern pike in lakes around the state. The pike stocking in particular interested me because I got to try pickled pike for the first time at the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers Rendezvous, and it was delicious. It's also strange to me that in North Dakota, they actually stock pike, while in Washington State, they're doing everything they can to eradicate them, to include putting a bounty out on them. There are good reasons for this, but we'll have to address those issues at another time. From the Midwest, we'll head to the southeastern United States, where the state DNR reports bass fishing is very good in several central Georgia lakes, to include Lake Russell, Lake Jackson, and Lake Oconee, where the shad spawn is on and the bass are in the shallows chasing after those shad. Oh, and if you're fishing near the dam or up the rivers at Oconee, don't be surprised if you hook into some stripers too. All right, let's put down that fishing rod and pick up a camera, because we are heading back to Boise, Idaho to help you become a better outdoors photographer.
Next up on this special edition of America Outdoors Radio, broadcasting from the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers Convention, we've spent a lot of time talking about R3, recruiting, retaining, reactivating hunters, but there's more to this conference than that. There's a lot of craft improvement seminars that are taking place, and one that was absolutely packed today was all about outdoors photography. The person that gave the seminar full of some great tips is Garrett Smith. He's a professional photographer. He works with Steven Ranella at Meat Eater. He's done work with Nat Geo and a whole bunch more too. Garrett, real pleasure to have you on the air.
Thank you, John. Pleasure to meet you. Thanks for sitting in today.
I learned a lot, and I want to take some of that and share it with our audience today. Now, we're not going to be talking about the f-stops and aperture priority here. I mean, everybody's a photographer, and that's just the way things are today. And a lot of them are photographers even on their iPhones. But people are taking more pictures than ever. And I guess the first question most people ask you, and I love the answer you gave, is what kind of camera should I use when I'm in the outdoors?
Yeah, my response immediately is the one that you're going to take with you. You know, if you don't have your camera because it's too bulky or, you know, for whatever reason, you're not going to get the imagery that you're trying to send out to get. And so, yeah, bring something that you're going to pack with you at all times, whatever that may be.
And that might be an expensive DSLR. That could be a bridge camera like I use. It could be a point and shoot. Or, like so many of us have, just that iPhone or Android device in your pocket. Take some pictures. But let's talk about taking good pictures. Because, as we both know, social media is littered with awful pictures. So we want to help our audience. And I really like what you point out, that as a photographer, you're a storyteller. And I've never really thought of it that way. I've always thought that as a photographer, I'm just capturing the moment. But you've got a different viewpoint on this.
Yeah, because I think as a visual storyteller, you can give an audience the same experience you experienced. You know, that's the goal. And that involves using the tools of the camera, and I can go through that, the framing.
Well, I'm not talking about that so much. I'm talking about capturing photos, moments in time that tell a story.
Yeah, it's similar to, you know, filming for TV. It's there's parts to it where you have, you know, an introduction to the character, you have a tight shot, a medium shot, a wide shot, and you have, you know, a lot of times I'll think in three-frame bursts, basically, like, here's the person, here's the sense of place, and here's what we're doing, or an emotion or something. So it's very much not a manipulation, but as like a storyteller aspect, you have more control over it than just grabbing kind of a broad overview. You can get as deep as you want, and you pull out and, you know, show the space as much as you want.
We had a great example about a turkey hunter and how you would capture that as a story.
Well, you know, as you think about, like, if someone's doing a turkey call, you want to get a shot of that hand and that turkey call. But you're also going to maybe throw a little bit of an eye in there as far as the tight framing. But you're going to want the field. You're going to want to show the sense of space and time. And, with those combined, you are kind of telling the story. You know, obviously it helps with the written word, but as a photographer, I truly feel like you are setting the sequence of, you know, events.
Something else that you taught me today, I've been one of those guys, you know, the rule of thirds, that you always have one third is your subject and one third, you know, and you layer it so you have something foreground, something mid, something far out. But you were suggesting that sometimes it's okay to break that rule, and it's okay to fill that frame and have a center shot. And you had some wonderful examples, not just close-ups, but even, I guess I would say, more landscape shots where your eye is drawn to the middle of the photo and the two ends beyond it are not immaterial, but they just complement that center.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate that. And I always feel like don't waste any space in a frame, but oftentimes open space is useful. And so capitalize on that. And same with, like you're saying, with the rule of thirds, often that's a great composition. But, you know, at times, the surrounding of the environment the character's in, centering them up really does create a different emotion. And you just play around with that, experiment. And sometimes it doesn't work. We're in the digital era, so, you know, frame it up and decide.
Something else I like is capturing emotion. So many photos are out there as, hey, go sit out there and pose for me.
Yeah.
But you really specialize in being that fly on the wall that's unobtrusive. You're not part of the story. You're capturing the story. And I guess your best advice was trying to anticipate when those moments are going to happen and be ready for them. Why don't you give some examples of that?
You know, like in the hunting space, I know as we're approaching a ridgeline that the light's going to change. Steve may see, or any character for that matter, may see the quarry they're after at that moment. So there's place I can put myself in position to film him coming in a scene, not skylining myself, coming in a scene, being on the right side so that he gets the light that I want him to get, whether it be backlit or frontlit, then also be in the position so when he sees, or she, sorry, sees the quarry, you capture that candidly, whether stills or with video. I was told in college by a great photographer, Bill Allard, shoot adjectives and adverbs, not nouns and verbs. So if you can anticipate what's going to happen, you can focus on, you know, being more creative, and you're not going to be scrambling to catch up with what's actually happening.
And in photography, catching up almost never, ever works. That much I know. We've got to go. But if people want to see your work, if they want to find out more about what you do, is there a website we can steer them to?
Heck yeah, Dirt Myth Creative for my website, and then all my links are on there, but Dirt Myth on Instagram as well.
So Dirt Myth on Instagram or dirtmythcreative.com. Check out Garrett's work, get inspired, and get out there and do like Garrett suggested today. Just make a promise to yourself to take a photo a day outdoors. If you do so, you're going to be a better photographer for it. Garrett, thanks for sharing this with us today on America Outdoors Radio.
Pleasure, John. Thank you.
It's been a great rendezvous in Boise, but we've got to start wrapping things up. If you find yourself on the internet Saturday mornings at 6 a.m. Eastern Time, tune into our show. You can do so on talkamericaradio.us, the new voice for conservative talk radio heard throughout the internet and on several terrestrial stations, too. We've got a Facebook page, America Outdoors Radio. Do us a favor and like that, and you can always find out what's coming up on our show through our website at AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com. If you didn't catch all of our show this weekend, don't worry. In a few days, it'll be up and available as a podcast. You can catch past shows on several different platforms. We've got a new one, Radio Public. We're also on Podbean and Stitcher. Just look for America Outdoors Radio. And if you go to YouTube, our channel there is Northwestern Outdoors. That's one word. Subscribe, and you can hear not only this show, but portions of our regional show, Northwestern Outdoors Radio. One last thing. As we wrap up, I hope you'll consider joining the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. It's a great organization. Again, like I've said before, it's all about anglers and hunters who love to recreate on our public lands and protect those public lands for future generations. If you want to find out more, go to backcountryhunters.org. That's backcountryhunters.org for Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. I'm a member, and I hope you'll become one too. Here's hoping you're blessed in the days ahead and that you may be able to enjoy some time playing outside on our public lands throughout America. After all, it is your country and your outdoors, so get out there and enjoy it.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers seeks to ensure North America's outdoor heritage of hunting and fishing. Lend your voice to the fight by visiting backcountryhunters.org and join the 25,000 men and women who have pledged to defend wildlife and public access.